and no other place existed. This became particularly true when the coffee houses opened up on Telegraph Avenue and the free speech movement started. One time, Nicholas was standing in line at the co-op on Grove and saw Mario Savio in line ahead of him. Savio was smiling and waving at admirers. Nicholas was on campus the day the fuck sign was held up in the cafeteria, spelled P-H-U-Q-U-E, and the cops busted the guys holding it. However, he was in the bookstore, browsing, and missed the whole thing. Although he lived in Berkeley forever and ever, Nicholas attended the university for only 2 months, which made him different from everyone else. The others attended the university in perpetuity. Berkeley had an entire population of professional students who never graduated and who had no other goal in life. Nicholas's nemesis vis-a-vis the university was ROTC, which in his time was still going strong. As a child, Nicholas had gone to a progressive or communist front nursery school. His mother, who had many friends in the Communist Party in Berkeley in the 30s, sent him there. Later, he became a Quaker, and he and his mother sat around in friends meeting, the way Quakers do, waiting for the Holy Spirit to move them to speak. Nicholas subsequently forgot all that, at least until he enrolled at Cal and found himself given an officer's uniform and an M1 rifle. Thereupon, his unconscious fought back, burdened by old memories. He damaged the gun and could not go through the manual of arms. He came to drill out of uniform. He got failing grades. He was informed that failing grades in ROTC meant automatic expulsion from Cal, to which Nicholas said, "What's right is right." However, instead of letting them expel him, he quit. He was 19 years old and his academic career was ruined. It had been his plan to become a paleontologist. The other big university in the Bay Area, which was Stanford, cost far too much for him. His mother held the minor post of clerk for the U.S. Department of Forestry in a building on campus. She had no money. Nicholas faced going to work. He really hated the university and thought of not returning his uniform. He thought of showing up at drill with a broom and insisting it was his M1 rifle. He never thought of firing the M1 rifle at his superior officers, though. The firing pin was missing. Nicholas, in those days, was still in touch with reality. The matter of returning his officer's uniform was solved when the university authorities opened his gym locker and took the uniform out of it, including both shirts. Nicholas had been formally severed from the military world. Moral objections, more thoughts of brave demonstrations, vanished from his head, and in the fashion of students attending Cal, he began roaming the streets of Berkeley, his hands stuck in the back pockets of his Levi's, gloom on his face. Uncertainty in his heart, no money in his wallet, no definite future in his head. He still lived with his mother, who was tired of the arrangement. He had no skills, no plans, only inchoate anger. As he walked along, he sang a left-wing marching song from the International Brigade of the Loyalist Army of Spain, a communist brigade made up mostly of Germans. The song went, "For Madrid im Schützengraben, in der Stunde der Gefahr, mit den eisernen Brigaden, sein Herz voll Hass geladen, stand Hans der Kommissar." The line he liked best was, "Sein Herz voll Hass geladen," which meant, "His heart full of hate." Nicholas sang that over and over again as he strode along Berkeley Way, down to Shattuck, and then up Dwight Way back to Telegraph. Nobody noticed him because what he was doing was not unusual in Berkeley at that time. One often saw as many as 10 students striding along in jeans, singing left-wing songs and pushing people out of the way. At the corner of Telegraph and Channing, the woman behind the counter at University Music waved at him, because Nicholas often hung around there browsing through the records. So he went inside.
"You don't have your uniform on," the woman said.